Hello and welcome to another SGR Coffee Break. This is episode number 12, which means we've been going for three solid months now.
It's a dozen, baby.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I don't even know how to, next week we get the Baker's Dozen, so.
I know. So lovely. You know what? I may have to get donuts for that occasion. Get a Baker's Dozen of donuts.
Make them donut holes, that way at least they're small.
That's true, because I could probably eat, you know, a baker's dozen of donut holes, but if I'm trying to eat a baker's dozen of donuts, I might throw up on the podcast.
Or you probably just wouldn't even be sitting still. You'd be running back and forth down your hallway.
No, I'd be on the fetal position on the floor, clutching my stomach, going, oh my God, the rock, the rock.
I've got so much sugar and bread.
Yeah, and grease.
Oh, yummy. Okay, so 13 donut holes. There we go. Okay. I'll have to invest in some donut holes next week too, then.
That'll be fun.
It can be the sugar cast. Yay.
Sugar and coffee. Yay. Yeah, what goes well with sugar? I mean, what goes well with coffee? Sugar.
Sugar. Duh. Oh, brother. So this week we were gonna talk about gaming rituals. And these are those things that you do that, you know, maybe you're going to sit down and play a game all day. So you kind of do certain things to get yourself prepped. Or if you get a new game and you're like, okay, you need to kind of do a certain kind of thing just to get, you know, situated and prepared to dive into this new game. So Carrie, do you
basically, this is going to be, how OCD is Chris?
Oh yeah. It's going to be terrible. Cause when I was thinking about it this morning, I was like, man, I do a lot of stupid shit.
Okay, well, first of all, I haven't been able to play a game all day since 2008.
Okay. So, if you're going to sit down to play Dragon Age, is there something that you do just to kind of, I mean, other than shutting the door, so that way your kids don't come in and turning persistent gore off because you're uncool like that?
I'm sorry. I had the persistent gore on in Dragon Age Origins because I didn't know you could turn it off. And it was just, you know, like you said, you go and stab this tree and you got blood like all over you. I mean, I admit that's it awesome. Made conversations hysterical because they'd be having serious conversations with you. And I'd be thinking, I can't take you seriously with this blood going across your face. But in Dragon Age 2, which is actually more bloody, if you can believe it. And not just bloody as in, like, the spray, but just, like, how much enemies bleed out on the ground. I mean, it got some blood-soaked floors. Like, I think my coworker told me that I needed to get a towel down on my carpet in case the blood came out of the TV.
Oh, brother.
So that was when I learned you could turn it off. But actually, probably the only ritual I really have, now that you talked about turning off persistent gore, is I always turn on the subtitles.
You know,
I make sure those are on, and it's mainly because I've learned, like, in some games, especially like in Dragon Age, or even in Skyrim, I noticed this, that people would be talking in the background, and maybe I couldn't totally make out what they were saying because I couldn't hear it because I'm paying attention to this, but it would come across the screen. So at least I wouldn't miss it. And sometimes, you know, the sound is not good for whatever reason, or you can't hear it over some other effect because I haven't done the balancing well, or the music's too loud, or there's something, and I'm not always able to hear it. So but if I read it, you know, it's always right there. Maybe I'm admitting that I'm getting old and I can't hear as well. I don't know. But
I was watching a streamer this weekend and he was bitching about how subtitles are never defaulted as on, and I was like, I would turn that shit off right away because I hate subtitles. So
yeah, because like when you were playing, I was watching you, I was like, turn the subtitles on, turn them on. but it wasn't my game, and I don't know, because sometimes, and also something like an Uncharted, for example, some of the dialogue comes really fast. And so you'll miss it. But if it's up there on the screen, you know, I'll catch it. Of course, it gets annoying when the subtitles come up and they're like a whole paragraph on there. And it takes like 5 minutes for the character to get through it. And you're already done reading, going, spit it out. We got it. Or if they don't time the subtitles right. So therefore a spoiler comes and it ruins the moment it would have happened if it was organic. But But yeah, I think it's probably the only, oh, so there's two things I do. So I make sure the subtitles are on, and then I go in and I check the y-axis. Because normally it's defaulted to not inverted, because I don't play inverted. I never played Flight Simulator, so I don't have that natural thing for the inverted y-axis. Even though now it's mostly defaulted to not do it, I still check, because there's nothing quite like starting a game, getting in, and it's like, ah, crap. Up is not up, and down is not down. This is like Bizarro Land. Must change.
Oh, yeah, do it. That, nope. Up is down, down is up.
No. See, my husband, he'll always check and make sure that it's inverted, because he can't play without it being inverted.
That's exactly what I do. And there are certain times, like there are certain games that where it's really nice where if you're in first person view, where inverted works. But then if you jump out and you're like trying to look around the world, I don't. Mm-hmm. For me, sometimes there's like, if I'm playing first person or even if it's third person, like in an MMO, I still play inverted. But it was what was it? Isn't it The Order that I was complaining about? How?
Yes.
It doesn't naturally do the switching, because there's times where I want up is up, and a lot of games are pretty good at dictating where that might actually kind of work out well. But yeah, I've been having issues with the order. But yeah. Inversion, always way to go.
No.
So you basically, when you're sitting down to play a new game, you're basically just checking to make sure that your settings are good.
Yeah.
Or you can dive in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really do any preparation or anything. Oh. For some weird reason, it does take me a while to gear myself up to playing a new game. I don't know why. It's like, you know, like when I played Final Fantasy Type-0, it took me a while to be like, okay, I really need to sit down and play this. And maybe it's because like another game I've been playing is like a comfortable shoe. And it's familiar, and this is brand new, and I have no idea if I'm going to like it. I don't know. I'm kind of weird that way when it comes to new games. But, you know, now that I'm more familiar with Type-0, you know, I could jump back in. But then when I get the new review, it's like, oh, do I really want to play this? I'm not familiar with it. It's really weird how I don't know. It's like this instant fear, and I don't understand why.
Oh. I don't have that. I get really excited. As soon as I get something, I'm just like, let's play. Let's go.
But no, like, there's no setup I do. Unless I'm reviewing a strategy guide, then, you know, then I have, like, my little TV tray table next to me, and I have it open with my bookmarks and my notepad. But, you know, that's because I'm reviewing something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. All right. Well, here we go. I'm going to do something like, if I'm going to play Diablo 3, I usually know this is going to happen on a Sunday, because that's when my friends are all jumping on. Or even Elite Dangerous, or Evolve, for that matter. If I know that I'm going to be doing that, and those are usually all-day things, right? Like, that's an all-day affair. I basically jump on in the morning, I'll be playing by myself, then my friends will start jumping on about noon, and then we just play throughout the day, because his wife goes away and takes the kids, so he's got some time, yada yada yada. Anyway, so on those days that I know that I'm going to be doing something that I don't really have to listen to the game, because let's face it, Elite Dangerous, I'm just going to hear the spaceship, and I mean, it's cool, it's fun, but
you're going to hear the
yeah, and Diablo 3, I mean, really, there's, you don't even need to hear anything in that. Evolve is because of how you're tracking the monster, yeah, having sound would be kind of nice, but I found that I could just as easily do it without having sound. Anyway, so what I'll do on those days, like on a Sunday or Saturday, where I know I'm going to invest a steady chunk of time, I have two monitors. So before I load the game, I will go ahead and bring up Twitch and put it over on my left side and find a streamer that I'm going to be wanting to watch. Usually on Saturdays, I'll jump onto the League of Legends stuff. This weekend, there's another fighting game tournament, so I'll be watching that.
So you watch another game while you're playing a game?
Yeah. Well, I have it for the, like, if there's something really big going on, I'll stop and look and watch what's going on over there. But usually it's just for the audio, so I'm just listening to what's going on. Once you've played, you know, like, if you watch enough League of Legends, you can pick up the terminology so that way you don't have to be like, what? What did they say? And if I'm watching a fighting game stream, it's the same way. You just, I already know. Like, if they're like, oh, this guy executed this in 2 frames, and then you're like, oh, shit, and you look over, and they'll do, like, a little replay of it. So it's usually for that. Sometimes I'll pull up Spotify and just start listening to music. Sometimes, every once in a while, I will throw on, like, if I'm just playing at night, sometimes after, like, 8 o'clock or something like that, I'll just bring up Netflix, and I'll put it up over there and just find some movie that I've probably already watched too many times and throw it up over there. So I'll do that. I'll make sure that I have a thing of water, or, you know, have a beer, or so I get all that set up.
Yeah, I do always have to have the water. That is a must. Or if I'm playing Diablo, the wine, because seriously, Diablo, I could do that in my sleep, and I think I did.
Yeah,
at Extra Life. Yeah,
we did in our sleep. So I'll do that.
Prozac. Okay.
The other thing I'll do is, like, if I know that on Sunday, if I'm going to be doing that with my friend, we all just drink the day away. So, like, there's this preparation before the weekend comes to make sure that I've got enough rum, enough Coke Zero. If there's wine, I got to make sure that that's good. Make sure that I got beer, whatever it is that I'm going to be doing, and then also making sure I have, like, some junk food, because let's face it, this is like me reliving my youth, is just sitting on the floor playing video games all day. So I'll do that, and then once I've got all that stuff situated out, you know, I got my stream going on, some sort of audio entertainment over here, then I'll jump into the game, and then it's, you know, then I'll start playing. And there's usually a little bit of warm up, because if I'm going to try playing right out of bed, it's like your fingers are still kind of slow and all that. If it's a game that I actually have to, like when I'm doing The Order, I'm still at my computer desk because my PS4 is hooked up to my computer monitor. That one is, you know, when I was getting ready to sit down and play that, I was like, okay, you know that there's gonna be a lot of talking, yada yada yada, and then the QuickTime events caught me off guard. But you know, that it was like, okay, made sure that my PS4 controller was charged, made sure that I closed down all the other distractions. I have a little switch box, so my whole computer will actually just jump back over to my laptop and call it a day, and then my PS4 comes up on my computer screen. So I'll make sure, like, Pigeon is up.
So hardcore.
So I can do the chatting with the friends and that kind of thing. Megan will sometimes be, I mean, we are 20 feet from each other, but we will still IM each other. So, you know, just to make sure that that's going. I usually do away with Twitter, so that way I'm not watching this constant wall of negativity constantly streaming. So I'll do that. Now, next week, when Bloodborne comes out, what I end up doing with a new game is usually, I know that by launch, if there's a new game, I'm just going to say F it. And so what I'll do when I have a new game coming out that I'm really excited for, so like Pillars of Eternity or Bloodborne or Mortal Kombat 10X, however we're saying that, you know, I'll make sure that all of my chores and tasks that I need to do, so like if I am doing some plumbing work, I'll make sure that shit's done before I get that game. And then I'll do things like, I'll get some pizza, so that way I can just eat pizza. I don't have to worry about making dinner. I just throw in a pizza, call it a day. Again, I'll make sure that I have adult beverages on hand, and basically make sure that I've cleared off my day, and then sit down at my desk, like I know that I'm ready to go, just kind of relax into it. I do a lot of, so like, because all games now, basically when you put them in your drive, right, you have to do a patch. So usually during the patching is when I'm going off and getting all my drinks and getting that stuff set up, using the bathroom, make sure that I'm not interrupted mid cutscene because I have to pee really bad. And then I'll nicely enjoy ripping open, like I'll do it at my desk. So I'll rip open the cellophane and enjoy all that and open it up, and I'll look through the pamphlets if there's anything in there, which most games now don't even have that anymore. And then sit down and prepare.
That's what I used to do. Like when I was younger, whenever we got like a new NES game, first thing I would do was get out that instruction booklet, and I would probably read about 5 or 6 times. And it wasn't as much of learning the moves and all that. It was, sometimes it would have like the back info of the story or like little tidbits. And I just love the illustrations in them.
Oh yeah. I always loved it because a lot of games back in the day, you'd have different art going on in there and nice little story. Sometimes you find a comic kind of tucked away in the middle of the book. Yeah, no, we just don't have that anymore. And you know, they're doing away with it because of trees and all paper and packaging and all that other nazi jazz. But at the same point, I still kind of miss that flipping through the book. Like when you got a Final Fantasy game and you pulled out that instruction manual that was, you know, a small novel, you were just reading through that. Oh, miss those days.
And so I think I got Final Fantasy VII really late in life. And I think I finally found it, like the original in the PlayStation 1 discs. And I actually found it for less than $100.
Oh, wow.
So I got it, and it was a new copy. So I had an instruction booklet in it. I was flipping through the instruction booklet, and I was like, oh my God, it tells you exactly how to beat that first boss that you come in. Like, verbatim, like, this is what you do, because it just wanted to kind of ease you into it. So I'd forgotten they had done stuff like that too.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss those. Nintendo still does a pretty decent job with shoving big books and instruction manuals in their 3DS games.
Yeah, somewhat. But my 3DS games haven't really, you know, they've come in with the, you know, register this, which now obviously
I'm not
doing that anymore, but, you know, I don't really remember very much. Recently, anyway.
Yeah. Ah, the good old days.
Actually, the big reason why they don't have those instruction booklets anymore is not because of the paper. That's probably somewhat to do with it, because, you know, printing costs are insane. It's actually amazing, like, how much it costs to print something.
Oh yeah.
And but it's mainly that games today have tutorials of some sort within the game. So there isn't that need to, you know, like Super Mario Brothers 2, you were just literally dropped into this game and like, knock yourself out. So you knew how to jump if you played the first one, but you didn't know that you could pick, you know, stand on characters and pick them up and throw them and pick up vegetables and things like that unless you had an instruction booklet. You know, nowadays it would have, you know, you would have fallen down, and as you get on that one ledge and you saw the shy guy coming towards you, a game would pause real quick and said, press B to pick up a vegetable. Press B again to throw it. You know, that's what would have happened now.
You know what? You know, the one thing that I really miss, that was a ritual back as a kid, going to the kitchen. You'd wake up in the morning, your parents are still asleep or they're off. Like my stepdad would be out taking care of the horses and getting ready for a trail ride. And so I would go into the kitchen and I'd find a giant Tupperware bowl. I'd grab a box of cereal and fill that damn Tupperware bowl to the brim with cereal. You know, so that way, and I had it worked out. So I knew if I left just a little bit, I could get just a little bit of milk in there, because milk just ruins cereal. Let's face it. I mean, you just want it for, you know, a little bit of liquidation, but and
okay. All right.
Going out to the, so when I was a kid, our couch, we had a couch here. We had a nice big coffee table that set up pretty high. And I would yank my Super Nintendo, drag it across the floor to the point that, you know, the cords were a tripping hazard, so that way I could have the controller, and I'd sit on the floor with my back up against the couch in this giant bowl of cereal, and I'd start playing Super Mario World and just shoveling cereal in. Oh, and playing games. Oh, I there's a part of me that really misses that, and I know it's like terrible for you, right? Like sitting on the floor. Yeah,
you could now still do that now, you understand, right? Like,
I could, but I don't have a coffee table.
You could build one. Build like a little makeshift coffee table.
I probably could. But just like, that was the thing that I did every Saturday morning right up till the point that My stepdad was like, nope, get your ass outside. Go take care of the horses. What? No. Why didn't you make me my coffee this morning? Go split some wood. Throw some wood on the fire. damn chores. But... So.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have been allowed to do that as a kid.
We were allowed to do that, especially when it was cold, like when it got really cold in Michigan, or if it was raining and like they knew that there was no chance in hell we were going to go outside. We were allowed to do it then. We were allowed to do it usually Saturday mornings. We got away with, you know, getting up, doing that thing. And then at about noon, about the time that lunch would start happening, they'd be like, okay, turn the TV off, go outside. So then no. You know, you just hop on your bike and start riding around until you found somebody to play with. Or you went out in the woods and destroyed trees, or you went down to the local watering hole and went swimming.
No, but I mean, my parents were very kind of anti-video game, and they still kind of are.
Ooh.
So, no, like, so we had an NES, but I mean, our time on it was very limited and very restricted. Like, my mom would go and take the controllers type thing.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They didn't understand it. They were like, eh, whatever. Just don't be on it all day. And whenever they wanted to watch TV, it was like, better hope you saved.
Yeah.
Better hope that you saved. So.
Back when you couldn't save in every single game.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and there's times that we left it, we would leave our Nintendo or Super Nintendo on just that way and it would be paused so that way they could watch whatever they wanted. And when they went to bed, we'd be like, okay, let's go play some more.
Yep. I had friends who did that too.
But if you're on a hot streak, that always screwed you over because you'd be like, oh, I'm so far in Super Mario Brothers now. How, oh, this is so awesome. And then you just die and be like, well, that was a waste.
He almost melted your cartridge in there just for that.
Probably. But it was so good. Hey, shit, we did as kids.
So, oh, Carrie, good old days.
What have you been playing? That's not good old days.
No. Well, I guess one of them's kind of a good old day.
Oh.
No, not really. I've been Final Fantasying it up this week. And it's really kind of funny little story. Yesterday I was wearing a gaming t-shirt, as I usually do. And my son asked me, he like pointed at a shirt and he said, do you have that game? Of course, I forgot what I was wearing. I looked down. I was like, oh, yeah, I do. He goes, can I watch you play it sometime? And I said, sure. It's Final Fantasy VII. I give the kid 5 minutes. Hawks.
You never know. You never
know. Because the shirt was Cloud with his Buster Sword holding it up, and he's riding a giant chicken. It wasn't a chocobo, it was a giant chicken. And he was like, do you really ride giant chickens? I said, more or less. Do you fight dragons? Yeah, I think I remember there being a dragon. I want to watch you play. Yeah, you're going to hate this.
Or you could wait until if you ever get into Final Fantasy 14, because you get to ride a giant chicken on that too.
Oh, you ride giant chickens all the time. It's not a Final Fantasy game unless you ride a giant chicken. A
chicken?
I mean, like in Final Fantasy 3, I actually rode on a giant, like this one quest that you get from this random side quest that was like, you know, I want a map of the area. So what you have to do is you get on your chocobo and you have to go the entire perimeter of the area and then the side quest is completed. So they encourage you to ride the giant chickens.
Chicken riding for the win.
So, but I played Final Fantasy Type Zero.
This is an old PSP game that was only in Japan, right?
Yes, it was a PSP game that was only in Japan. It came out, I believe, not long after Final Fantasy 13 did. And as I was doing some research on this, it turns out that Square Enix has this weird idea of doing, if they call it a Fabula Crystallis series. And what the games that are in that series are Final Fantasy 13, Type Zero, and Final Fantasy 15. But you know, Final Fantasy 15 used to be 13 versus. So basically it's everything that kind of deals with 13. But the way I see Type Zero is like, okay, I see where they're saying this is part of that universe. In that, it's not they say it's the same universe, but it may be like maybe the same areas, maybe the same terminology for stuff and same mythology, but it's not the same universe. It's Square Enix. You're not supposed to understand it. You just smile and nod. Like, okay, I get it. But I see Final Fantasy Type-0 as a love letter to Final Fantasy fans, because it takes a little bits and pieces of every Final Fantasy game and puts it in this one. The cool thing about it is that it's not turn-based. It is action-based. Reason why it's called Type-0 is because what this game is about is there's this continent called Orient, and the four countries and their worship their various crystals, which, you know, the crystals have been part of the Final Fantasy universe since day one. Mm-hmm. Always been about the stupid big crystals that we worship and we get life and magic, and even Bravely Default was about the crystals. Each crystal gives its country a different power. Well, this one country, the Militase Empire, decided that they're just going to invade the other countries and take their crystals. And so they completely annihilated one country, and they're trying to annihilate the Dominion of Rubrum, and their crystal gives them the abilities for magic. Well, they have this thing called the Agito Cadets that are trained in different ways of magic. And this one class, Class Zero, you don't know where they came from. It's kind of assumed that either I'm like, halfway through the game, I was like, were these kids created or were they kidnapped and, you know, molded? Because they're not like normal kids with magic. They're very unique in their skills, and they all band together. They're like a family. They call each other brothers and sisters. They call the woman who introduced them their mother. So it's all very, which is kind of, you know, very Shinra-esque in many ways. And then with some of the enemies you fight for the Militase Empire, because they do everything with machines, you'll recognize several of the mechanical enemies from Final Fantasy VII and X and XIII. Then they actually bring in the whole idea with the Lassie, which made me just facepalm, because the Lassie is from Final Fantasy XIII. But they do a different take on the Lassie, slightly different take on the Lassie. They devote to the crystals, not the fallacy. So at least things aren't, you know, sounding the same. See, they got that going for it. But so your class of Class Zero has got 14 cadets. And so you have a party of three. But whenever in your combat one goes down, you can bring in another member of the class. So the game is over when all 14 are wiped out. So therefore, because of that, you want to constantly rotate out who's in your active party so that they can level up equally. They all have their own different techniques, and there are some that you never want control of, because like this one girl, all she was a buffer and a debuffer. Well, that doesn't help me in my attacks, but so if she ever popped up in my party, I made sure I switched it out to use somebody else, so she was always in the background. Mm-hmm. I would like her in my party, just not under my control. And there was one guy I also hated controlling, because whenever he had his weapon out, he wouldn't move quickly if his life depended on it, which, newsflash, dude, it does. So, that was just, you know, 2 out of 14 that I never wanted to control, which is not that bad. And you have opportunity to be in the overworld where you go out and you have random encounters, and you can see the beasts roaming, which is a combination of old Final Fantasy and Final Fantasy XIII. There's chocobo breeding, although the purpose for doing so there's not really a need to, because you don't get anything special except for, hey, look at all these chocobos you have. Look at the rare chocobos you created. That's a total callback to Final Fantasy VII with the chocobo breeding. The weird thing about it is that it's set up almost like Crisis Core, in that it's kind of a missions. Everything's done based on missions, because, you know, you're fighting this war. Mm-hmm. And but in between missions, you have so many hours to do whatever. And it's not real-time hours. It's fake game hours. And so 2 hours will tick by if you talk to somebody. 2 hours will tick by if you attend a class lecture. If you leave the academy to go out and explore, that's 8 hours that's gone.
Jeez.
So that's your time to go get side quests, maybe talk to people, try to, you know, learn a little bit more about what's going on, blah, 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 blah. But sometimes they give you, like, not very much time, so you really have to pick who you're going to talk to. And other times they give you so much time, it's like, seriously, like, I'm just going to keep going back out and coming back in, going back out and keep coming back in just so I can waste time. Or later in the game, you can unlock the ability to be talked to a certain person, like, oh, you ready to start your mission? And just fast forward you to it. But they want you to level up because the missions, they jump in their difficulty. And they also really want you to go to the title screen and replay missions and get that experience, because a lot of the side quests, it's really funny because, like, I just progressed through it and, like, I'm level 22, I get to this one side quest and it's like, you must be level 55 to do the side quest. I'm like, okay, you really want me to redo these missions a lot to get to that level. But the game is actually fairly difficult. Like, it's really not that easy to blow through. Like, it told me to play on easy my first time through. I was like, whatever, I could play this on normal. No, I could not. It was very difficult. So if you want to challenge this game is totally, totally up to the challenge. Also, typical Final Fantasy, there's a whole lot of, I don't know what the hell is going on.
I've heard that if you replay it, like, after you beat it and you replay it through, apparently it opens up new cutscenes and helps define and clarify.
Yes. Well, also, well, there's that. And after you've played it and you go back and replay it, you'll go talk to different people maybe and unlock different scenes. And it's also most likely one of those that after you play it, it clicks when you see, you know, it's kind of like when you see the movie Pulp Fiction, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, I kind of see that. But you watch it again, you see how all the pieces moved and it clicks a little more. Yeah. That's what I imagine this kind of doing. I had the same thing with the Order 1886 as well when I played it the second time. So that said, this game is not for the Final Fantasy newbie. This is for seasoned veterans only. It really is. It's not going to lead you gently in. It is just like, if you don't know these certain things, they don't really explain it to you. There's barely a tutorial. There's no codex for you to go read. This is the world. Have fun in it. I also will say this is the bloodiest Final Fantasy I've ever played.
Oh, wow.
Because it really kind of shows the horrors of war, and not only the horrors of war on the battlefield, but the seedy politics that go behind the scenes. But there are several things that happened violence-wise, I was like, whoa, I did not see that coming. And I can't believe they just showed that, because it's not Final Fantasy style. So, but along with that, I got the demo code for Episode Dusque for Final Fantasy 15. The reason why it's called Episode Dusque is because this demo takes place in the Dusque region. And this is unlike any other Final Fantasy game in existence. And the attacks that they have are so bizarre, but yet they're fun. The whole time I was playing it, all I could think of is, you know, this is like Dragon Age Inquisition, but with Final Fantasy.
Hmm. So it should be right up your alley.
Yeah, it's just weird for a Final Fantasy game. It's not turn-based, it's action-based. It's you're like Dragon Age Inquisition. You're in this open world and you just go and explore. You can do side quests if you want. You can go along this path. It actually has navigational maps to help you. The weird thing I don't like about it is that there's no manual dodging. It's kind of annoying. The way that it handles the attacks, I put this all in my preview, so go read my preview, so listen to me ramble, because the attacks they're strange. They're unlike anything else that they've ever had in any other Final Fantasy game to date. It's like they just kept taking what they did in Final Fantasy 13 and just keep twisting it and twisting it and twisting it, and now they have it to where it is. But yeah, I mean, the strangest thing, though, is the ability to warp. And if you warp out to a high point, you can replenish your HP and MP. So you're just hanging with your sword and, like, this antenna, just chilling while the battle's going on below you. Like, there's a stealth sequence. You can hide behind rocks. These are things I'm like, what is this? This is not a Final Fantasy game. It's, as I put in my preview, it is like Final Fantasy finally put on his big boy RPG pants and decided to be a modern RPG.
So I was like, hey, they can rejuvenate the series.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if this is where it's going, I think it's about time. I mean, I love the classic games, but come on, let's break away from the classic formula a little bit. Of course, you know, they got the chocobos. I'm assuming Cid's going to be there somewhere. He's in every single game. One of the main characters looks just like Zack Fair. Another one looks just like Cloud Strife. You know, so of course they're going to have like those key things. And everything is there's driving. You're like in a car. Like, what's up with that?
Yeah, I heard. And I heard that you don't get to do a lot of it.
Well, no, because then I'd probably be out. But it's just like, it's just kind of, it's weird having this, you know, they got these huge swords and they're on chocobos and you're battling the classic behemoth. And then you get into your car and drive away. It's just, you know.
Awesome.
It's just, it's very strange. So, I mean, if they're able to pull off what they showed in the demo, this is their most ambitious Final Fantasy yet. Well, and it'll be great.
Hopefully they pull it off then.
Successful. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I watched a preview video of it this morning, actually, and it's like, I really want to play this. I really
hope it looks beautiful, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Square does a pretty decent job at making gorgeous games and beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, they craft some good worlds. It's not, they do that. Their last couple Final Fantasies have been pretty rough. Although the online stuff has been pretty good, so.
13, I will defend 13. I really enjoyed 13. 13-2 had potential, and then they ruined it with the ending by making it not have one. Mm-hmm. And then Lightning Returns, well, I haven't finished it. I don't think I'm going to. It's just, every time I think about it, I'm like, I don't hate myself that much.
I'm hopeful. I heard that it's like a road trip kind of thing. Like the story was like,
road
trip. Like their car, like your car's broken down. So you have to hunt down
a giant monster. So they're going monster hunting to get enough money to fix their car. But so the question is, I mean, that's just this one slice.
Right.
The question is, like, where were they going and why were they going there? I mean, surely there's a bigger reason than road trip. Maybe there's not. That'd be very un-Final Fantasy for it to be like road trip.
Yeah. I also heard that it's the demo they gave you is a big chunk of world. And apparently that's just a small fraction of how big the world will actually be.
Yeah.
Would you say that it was a pretty big kind of world for a demo?
Oh, yeah, because I was, you know, someone said, like, it can take you up to 3 hours to do it. And, yes, it can if you choose to explore every little thing. The other weird thing about it is the forced camping. Like, it actually does have real days. And so at nightfall, you have to camp. And it's highly suggested that you go and camp because the visibility honestly disappears on you, like at night, and the enemies don't stop coming. And so, and also when you camp at night, that's the only way you level up. It's like you sit around the campfire, sing Kumbaya, and, you know, go over the experience you accrued, and that's how you level up and learn new techniques. I've never seen anything like that. I'm not sure I like that because it feels like everything you've done during the day doesn't help you during that day.
Yeah.
So before you go after a certain boss or mini boss, you're going to want to go back to camp and hang out and level up and then go back. Go after the boss.
That's weird.
This is going to bring a different way of thinking.
Yeah. Huh, I don't know how I feel about that.
I know. It was very strange.
Yeah. Ugh. Is that it?
That is it. I have Final Fantasy out.
Oh, man, what are you going to do next week? I already know what you're doing.
I have a, you know, Type Zero, that strategy guide now to go through. I mean, I got like two more chapters left of the game that I'm going to use the strategy guide for. I'm going to comb over to a strategy guide and see everything that I missed playing without one.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still on the fence if I'm just gonna just go get Bloodborne and then start a character over again and go through with the guide, or if I'm just gonna be like, yeah, because there's a lot of playthrough on that. So anyway, I'm hoping, fingers crossed. So, well, let's see. I've been playing more Elite Dangerous. Been enjoying their they call it a debug camera. So now you can actually get outside of your ship and like float around space and then take screenshots, unhindered screenshots. So that's been a lot of fun. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
Been playing a lot more Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls. I got my full Marauder set armor now, so I am kicking some serious ass. For my Demon Hunter, I think Paragon 2, between 230 or 250. I just stopped counting. I just gave up. And I've been playing Evolve. I'm hoping to either start writing the guide today or tomorrow, depending on how words flow. And I was, you know, other than the fact that I have to run it in a window and I have to run it at a smaller resolution because my laptop just can't handle it that well. It does make me wish I'd bought it on PS4, but I knew I had friends on PC that would play it. It's a very interesting game. I've had a lot of fun with it. I can't say that. I can see why people are kind of like, yeah, we're done with this. And it's because, you know, you only have a handful of maps. There's only four monsters. I forget how many hunters there are, because there's like two or three that you unlock per class. So there's around 12 hunters, I do believe, because I think you get three per class. Each class, or like each hunter in that class, plays very differently. Mm-hmm. So like I like to do the support role, because I suck at trying to shoot monsters. So like I'm laying out turrets, auto sensing turrets, that way when the monster comes running through, the turrets will start firing at it. You can also, the guy that I play is a robot, so you can take your head off and like zoom your head around, fly your head all over the map, so that way you can help hunt down where the monster's at.
Okay.
And then tag it. I've done the assault a couple times. I've done the medic. The nice thing about it is that regardless of what class you go with, you always have a gun that you feel like you can fight back on the monster with. It may not be what, you know, your forte or anything, but at least they give you guns. That way when weak points are emerged, you can switch it up and start shooting those weak points and help bring down the monster. So that part's pretty cool. Being a monster is a ton of fun.
Well, of course you like being a monster. You get to be a horrible person.
Oh, it's so much fun, but there's definitely this like risk versus reward system that kind of you get, because you want to evolve as quickly as possible. So you get two evolutions between, you know, you go from stage one to stage two and then stage two to stage three. And you're trying to do that as quickly as possible, because obviously at stage three, you become just a tank, or a glass cannon, depending on like which monster you go with. But, you know, you have to run around and hunt down the wildlife, and you don't want to scare birds, because then that kind of gives off where you're at, and you really want to run all over the map, because it can, you know, it helps confuse the hunters. And then once you hit stage three, you have to go after like a power core. There's a power core in every stage if you're doing the hunting one, and you want to destroy that, which, you know, then if you can kill all the hunters, you win. If you destroy the power core, you win. And the monsters are just, they are beastly. It takes a lot of coordination with hunters to actually bring down a monster. So it's been a lot of fun. I really like the setting. I like the 4v1 kind of aspect. I can agree with the Honest Trailers, where it would be, I think that instead of having, they have a couple different modes. They have hunt, where it's just four hunters versus a monster. Then they have one where hunters have to go find monster eggs and destroy the eggs. And then there's one where you're basically just defending. But eventually it just all boils down to it's hunters versus a monster, and you got to go kill a monster. Yeah. But what I really liked was the idea that Honest Trailers had, where it would be four hunters and a monster versus another team that's four hunters and a monster. right? So now instead of you're still hunting monsters, but now you're trying to hunt down another team plus one monster, or you have 12 hunters and two monsters, or
so the two monsters would band together.
Well, no. It's one team versus another team. So it's one team of hunters plus a monster versus another team plus a monster.
But they're not trying to kill the monsters. They're just trying to kill the other team.
Yeah, you're just trying to kill the other team.
Interesting.
So, you're hunting down other hunters and their monster.
And so the hunters would assist you in feasting on the other hunters.
Right.
Okay. All right.
The two monsters can either go for the hunters or they can go for each other.
Okay.
And battle each other. And it would add another level of complexity because the monsters are now, not only do they have to worry about the opposing team's hunters, but now they also have to worry about the other monster taking over their food sources. So, you're trying to evolve before the hunters can find you, and you're trying to evolve faster than the other monster. I think that would just be a riot. I think it'd be totally good.
You could also have something kind of like a dominion thing where you have like a bunch of monsters trying to fight for one territory. So that, and there'd be like, hunters AI in there. So it'd be like, not only you guys against each other and trying to evolve fastest, but against the AI hunters. That can be kind of fun too.
Yeah. I mean, they have a good base. They just need to expand upon it. I mean, it's nice that they're going to be releasing the two new maps. And then if you bought the freaking, I really hate what they called it, but the PC Monster Race Edition, you get there's a new monster coming out, and I forget what it's, I think it's the Behemoth, I think is what they're calling it. Anyway, that's coming out in like April. So, but yeah, as I was playing it, it's like, I want to watch some other people. I want to see what good players that have been playing this for a while now, how well they're doing. And maybe I can get some other tips and tricks from them. And this game has lost its community pretty hard.
Oh.
It's really nice that they give you an offline. And yes, you're still playing with bots. So, you're playing with bot hunters and trying to hunt down a bot monster, or you play as the monster and you're playing against four bots. But I mean, that part's kind of nice. But I watched two streamers try to play online games. Mm-hmm. And they sat there for 10 minutes while it just waited
trying to find
people to play with.
Sucks.
And I was like, this is, yeah. I mean,
that's sad because that hasn't been out that long.
It's only been out like a month and a half, 2 months now.
Yeah, I don't know if Titanfall dropped off this quickly.
No, Titanfall lasted at least about six before it started to really lose. But I think what really did evolve in was that giant paywall, the $160, $200
of DLC
when they said that it wasn't going to have that much, but you have that much. And the fact that it's, the monsters, it'd be nice to have more monsters. I mean, you have a decent kind of range of hunters. It'd be nice to have a couple other classes. It'd be cool to see that. I think two maps will be nice. There's a good amount of maps. I mean, decent enough that you kind of put it in a rotation and not play the same map a couple times. But yeah, they needed, I don't know. To me, it seems like they could have added in a little bit more.
Yeah. No, that's a shame.
So I'm still enjoying it. I'll just keep playing with bots to level my guys up because I'm not going to sit here for 10, 15 minutes just trying to fucking find a game that I can play online. So. Yeah. So it's fun.
All right.
Should hopefully have the guide, like I said, either done this week or early next week. So there you have it. That's what I've been playing.
Now you got a bunch of old favorites. And yeah. I'm pleased that you're working on your guide.
Well, I had to finish it before next week.
Yeah, hopefully I can get the Bloodborne out to you as soon as possible because I'm working with Future Press and they're in Europe, so who knows when I'll be able to get it.
Gets here when it gets here.
Yep, pretty much.
Take us home, Carrie. Take us home.
Okay. Yeah, because I got Foundation people coming this afternoon, so I'm going to have to go run and take a shower and have them come and check out the house. And they got parent-teacher conference. This is so much fun being a parent and a homeowner.
Yeah, we're freezing our asses off because we don't have our heater running right now because our backflow valves are all broken.
Yeah, it's 80 here today.
Yeah, it's a toe-numb cold here.
Toe-numb cold?
Yeah.
I wish it was a little cooler, like the 60s. Let's ease into spring. We don't have to jump to the 80s in 2 days. This is crazy. Anyway, all right, so leave us a comment on this post if you want us to talk about something in particular, or you can email us at strategyguidereviews@gmail.com. You can check out our other podcast, The Evil Cast at Games Are Evil, which is coming to a close next couple of weeks. But we are actually this week and next week will be the last two episodes. And we are actually going to do a sort of a Book of the Month club with those guys. We'll explain more on that when the Evil Cast ends. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Chris at Starvin. You can follow me at Crunchy Chocobo. And you can follow the site at Strategy Reviews, not Strategy Guide Reviews. It's Twitter, but let me do that one. Strategy Reviews. And of course, we ask you keep on reading SGR. We keep trying to get the guides out as soon as we can. There's too many games, man. Too many games at once.
Too many games.
I know.
Too many good games. Too many good games.
That is true. It's too many good games. That's just not a bad problem to have.
Nope.
All right. So until next time, the Baker's Dozen.
Oh, yes. Donuts next week. Woo! Right. And we're out. Peace.